Welcome to a Citations Needed News Brief. I am Nima Shirazi.
I'm Adam Johnson.
You can follow the show on Blue Sky and Twitter, at Citations Pod, Facebook, Citations Needed, and become a supporter of the show through patreon.com/Citations Needed Podcast. All your support is so appreciated on Patreon, as we are 100% listener-funded. We have no ads, no sponsors, no grant money. We're able to continue doing the show because of the generous support of listeners like you. And we do these news briefs in between our regularly scheduled full-length episodes of Citations Needed. And today, Adam, we want to talk about a bit of Zionist discourse that is ubiquitous and has been for decades and decades, but we wanted to dissect it a bit in relation to the current media and Democratic Party pylon of Michigan Senate candidate Abdul El Sayed. And this has to do with the media always asking candidates and others about Israel's quote unquote right to exist. And so we've been tracking this a bit as it relates to the El Sayed candidacy in Michigan. But obviously there are much wider implications as we see this all over our political discourse and have for many decades.
Yeah, it's this question that's asked, like you said, ubiquitously, which is, do you believe Israel's a right to exist, with an implied as a Jewish supremacist state or a Jewish ethno-supremacist state, or they'll say it explicitly, do you believe it has a right to exist as a Jewish state? Now, other candidates who are, I think, very clearly anti-Zionist, like, for example, Zohran Mamdani, have said, I believe Israel's a right to exist as a state with equal rights, which some have found a little too clever by half. I actually think is kind of fine, because it does a Steven Seagal jujitsu thing where it uses liberalism against itself by saying, yeah, I support a state between the river and the sea with equal rights. Call it Israel, call it whatever you want, which forces people to sort of argue against liberalism, to argue against equality, to defend Israel as such, because, again, it can't, by definition, be a state with equal rights and an ethno-supremacist state at the same time. It cannot be an apartheid state and a state of equality at the same time.
Right. And like, liberalism has a hard time basically convincing itself that it's not in favor of one person, one vote. And so the gymnastics you have to go through to then support an apartheid state, an ethno-supremacist, like ethnic cleansing state that does not have equal rights for everyone.
Because there's an inconvenient people there.
Yeah, there's an inconvenient native population.
So it heightens contradictions. Yeah. I think pretty decently. Some people think it's a dodge, and I guess that's fair to an extent, but I think it actually is a useful way to frame it. And so other anti-Israel or Israel critical politicians who've emerged are repeatedly asked this question as typically their first or second question for when they go on CNN and MSNBC and when they were interviewed by the New York Times. It is a mantra of sorts to kind of ante up for seriousness, because if you say, my heart bleeds for Palestinians, we need to be more critical of Israel, you kind of front load that, but then you affirm this alleged right to exist as a Jewish state, as it were, you kind of do all the work for, you've done all the necessary anteing up for capital S, capital P, serious policy. As long as you sort of accept the axioms of Zionism, which is to say, an ethno-supremacist state in the Levant, the details we can kind of work out later, and they're mostly academic anyway, since Israel, you know, again, exists, and Israel is an apartheid state as it exists. And so you're kind of welcome, as in the kind of Ro Khanna, Brad Lander vein, to support some abstract two-state solution, but everybody knows that's never going to happen and is a total fig leaf to buy time for the extermination.
I mean, there's already only one state.
Right, there exists actually one state, so you either oppose it or you don't oppose it. And so when El Sayed, who is now in the polling lead for the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat in Michigan, he was, of course, asked this question, as he's been asked many times before, recently in an interview with CNN. And he gave a, I thought, a pretty solid and clever response to that question, which is where he began by flipping it on its head and asking why he's never asked if Palestine has a right to exist, as a way of exposing a double standard. It's a bit of a throwaway line. He sort of moves on, but I thought it was actually a really, from a media criticism standpoint, a very salient thing to bring up, and something that is indeed quantifiable. So let's listen to that clip right now and address the substance of his response.
Obviously, AIPAC is a big part of this conversation because Israel has become a very central topic, especially inside the Democratic Party, but nationally as well. Do you believe Israel has a right to exist?
So, Casey, AIPAC's become a big issue in this election because AIPAC's already spent $30 million in this election. They're by far the biggest spender in the race. Now, the question about a right to exist, it's interesting because nobody's ever asked me whether or not I believe Palestine has a right to exist. Every single president who served has said that they believe in a two-state solution. Israel exists. The question is whether or not we want a politics where our money is sent over to Israel to do genocide and apartheid instead of investing in our own kids.
You say it exists, but does it have a right to?
No, I didn't say that. I just said the question of Israel's existence is not a question. I'm not going to play this gotcha game about whether or not it has a right to exist. The question ultimately is about whether or not we want a politics that dignifies.
You're not going
to
play the gotcha game, but you're not going to say you think Israel has a right.
Well,
to exist.
My question, you know, Casey, I think the question we all ought to ask is, does everybody have equal rights to peace, dignity, and self-determination? That's Jewish, Israelis, and Palestinians. And to me, the folks who should answer what the ultimate peace there looks like should be Jewish, Israelis, and Palestinians. I want my tax dollars spent here in Michigan to provide schools in Michigan, to build healthcare in Michigan, to invest in Michigan, rather than to be sent abroad to kill Palestinian people, do genocides and apartheid. The question about whether or not Israel has a right to exist is actually quite secondary to whether or not they have a right to our tax dollars. And people don't ask that question in good faith. So if you want to ask me about Palestinian right to exist, if you want to ask me about what I want to do for kids in Michigan, I'm happy to answer that question. But the AIPAC and Israel have become secondary questions that too many people have to talk about because our tax dollars keep getting spent over there rather than being spent over here.
So yeah, as far as these things go, I thought that was a pretty solid answer. He turns it back on itself and provides some media criticism, which is always, I think, useful because it is a bullshit gotcha question. It is a loaded question. And it, of course, is an asymmetrical question.
But you can also see how the doubling down on the asking of the question is then like, oh, you won't answer it. You won't answer it. What does that really say about how you feel? And so the kind of ideological work that this is doing is trying to show someone who refuses to affirm an apartheid state's right to exist as an apartheid state as being somewhat dismissive of the human right to live if you are Israeli. Like, that is what is connected to all of this. It's trying to make an anti-apartheid, an anti-genocide, an anti-occupation, anti-ethnic cleansing stance, which is very basic, very normal, into the genocidal stance. It's supposed to flip it into the, well, if you don't think this state has a right to exist, you don't think those people have the right to exist, which is obviously not at all what anyone is saying, but that is the work that's being done there. And so it is really instructive, Adam, to really center on why this question is asked in this way so often. I mean, so often doesn't even do justice to it. As I said earlier, ubiquitously, it is constant. And then, as El Sayed does, let's flip it on its head and then interrogate how many times the media has asked candidates or sitting politicians or other pundits, whatever, about Palestine's right to exist. We may see some discrepancies there.
So I looked at this question for The Real News. I actually did interrogate whether or not news outlets ever ask if Palestine has a right to exist. And the answer is not really, never, actually. I examined 10 years of the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Politico, USA Today, Fox News, MSNBC/MSNow, and CNN over the past 10 years and found not a single candidate for office has ever been asked if they believe Palestine has a right to exist or Palestinians have a right to exist. We searched the phrases Palestine has a right to exist and Palestine's right to exist and found only 6 mentions in the 8 outlets above, 3 of which were in reference to a direct quote by the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, who affirmed his support for Palestinian statehood earlier this year, and the other 3 were brought up by guests on CNN and MSNBC. And so they're not brought up by the outlets themselves. They're not brought up by anchors, reporters, certainly not brought up by Donna Bash and Jake Tapper and Wolf Blitzer and Joe Scarborough as things for which one must be held account to. And they're not brought up by reporters or opinion columnists as something that you need to interrogate candidates or politicians over. Meanwhile, however, Israel's right to exist, quote, Israel's right to exist or Israel has a right to exist, has been brought up 1,001 times in that same time period in the aforementioned 8 outlets. Israel's right to exist has been invoked in the New York Times 189 times, Washington Post 119, The Wall Street Journal 59, Politico 121, USA Today 65, MSNBC and MSNow 106, CNN 144, Fox News 198 times. And if we remove Fox News, because, you know, some people don't view it as a legitimate news outlet and it's kind of cheating to add it, it's still 803 to 6 or 133 times more. And it's not as if Palestine's right to exist is not in dispute. Certainly, it's far more in dispute than Israel's right to exist. For example, Benjamin Netanyahu explicitly rejects Palestine's right to exist and has done so several times in several different speeches. And he's been on CNN giving interviews at least a half a dozen times over the last couple of years and has never once been asked if he believes in Palestine's right to exist. And that's just not brought up, much less scandalized and turned into a multi-day cycle. No candidate, no one running for office is said to have to account for this. Hardcore Islamophobes like Randy Fine, Brandon Gill, Nancy Mace go on CNN all the time. They're never asked if they believe in Palestine's right to exist. They're certainly not asked two, three, four different times. They certainly don't drag their friends on the next day and then ask them what they think about their colleagues not affirming Palestine's right to exist. And the reason is because Palestinians just aren't seen as fully human, and their dignity and self-determination is a subjective matter. It's a disputation of which we can kind of debate versus something that's seen as axiomatic and central and non-negotiable, like Israel's right to exist, which is why when the question's asked, it's done with this kind of incredulity and indignation. Like, how dare, what do you mean Israel doesn't have a right to exist? Let me ask you three more times. And that's because, again, Palestinians just simply aren't seen as fully human as an editorial standard, as an editorial practice.
And so what is this doing, right? What does the constant evocation of Israel's right to exist, and Adam, as you said, with the implicit definition of Israel as a Jewish state, that if you say, well, as Mamdani has done, as many others have done over the years in response to this, well, you know, I support a state that has equal rights for all, that is seen as being somehow anti-Israel, which it is, because Israel exists only as an apartheid state, only as a religious and ethno-supremacist state, and has for its entire existence. There has never been a state of Israel that has had equal rights for all.
Right, because there was people there who don't meet the demographic requirements. Now, they would say, oh, we've absorbed 20% of the Arab population and they have equal rights, which again is not true at all. But even if you grant that to be true, as long as they maintain a minority position, because again, their goal is to just be to do what my ancestors did to North America. It's to make it such that the native population is basically 1% or 2%. So you can sort of have them as tokens and—
Yeah, functionally powerless.
Right, you can make them objects of curiosity, but they have no real political power. But Palestinians, because their ethnic cleansing campaign took place, you know, 100 years after the North American one did, you know, give or take, they refused to just die off because of, you know, their ethnic cleansing campaign took place largely during the, what we would call the modern era. And so they're angry about that and they're frustrated and they say, well, Australia got to do it. You know, U.S. got to do it. Canada got to do it. Why can't we do it? And so in North America, then we get to have the sort of smugness of having de jure equal rights because they're not a threat. Or we don't view them as a threat, or white supremacy didn't view them as a threat once they were eradicated. And Israel thinks that any demographic challenge to their ethno-supremacy will be a threat, which of course it would be just by virtue of the ballot box, because why would 50% of the people vote to be second-class, third-class citizens? It's the same thing with South Africa. Once you give people equal rights, and again, I know there's criticisms around how that happened with respect to the still existing inequality, the fact that whites disproportionately still own most of the land in South Africa, but that's the future they fear. They fear that equal rights would mean that they lose their superior status, both formally and informally. And so that's why this right to exist is such a brain-dead canard. And I think Al-Sayed is right to just say, I'm not playing this gotcha game, because I don't have time to sit here and explain this to your you know, half-informed, this, you know, the 10 boomers that are watching this in an airport in Cincinnati. I can't get into that nuance because the question's so loaded and the assumptions are just taken for granted. So I'm just going to avoid this and talk about why we shouldn't fund the killing of kids in Palestine in support of apartheid in Palestine, which is, I thought, a pretty good answer. I mean, it's about as good as you can get.
Right. And as we've been saying, there are other things baked into that question and the expected answer, that humiliation ritual, you know, contrite response of supporting Israel's quote unquote right to exist. Along with that is then the other common line, Israel's quote-unquote right to defend itself, right? If you believe that something has the right to exist, then you believe that it has the right to defend itself. And then how is it always defending itself? Dot, 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 right? And then you get to colonization and occupation and siege and genocide. As Professor Joseph Massad wrote in 2011 in Al Jazeera on this exact question, he wrote this, quote, "The logic goes as follows. Israel has the right to colonize and occupy Palestinian land and to discriminate against Palestinians, whether in Israel within its pre-1967 boundaries or in the additional territories it occupied in 1967. And if this population resists these measures and Israel responds with military violence, causing massive civilian casualties, Israel would simply be, quote unquote, defending itself as it must and should," end quote.
And you can analyze the so-called right to defend itself, as I did in my book, How to Sell a Genocide. We looked into this question of how many times Israel's right to defend itself is evoked versus Palestinians' right to defend himself. This is a survey of the first 90 days after October 7th. In the New York Times, Israel's right to defend itself was evoked 99 times versus 1 for Palestinians, and that was also in a quote. Washington Post was 54 for Israelis, 0 for Palestinians. Associated Press was 63 for Israelis, 0 for Palestinians. CNN.com was 118 versus 1. Politico was 74 for Israelis, 0 for Palestinians. And on CNN and MSNBC combined on the cable networks, it was 755 for Israel's right to defend itself and 8 for Palestine's right to defend itself. So we see similar disparities there. And of course, the right to defend itself, like you said, Nima, follows from a right to exist, right? There's sort of it abstracts out what are fundamentally violent claims. So the right to exist is a assertion of apartheid. It's an assertion of an ethno-supremacist apartheid. And then the subsequent right to defend that ethno-supremacist apartheid is a license to kill as many Palestinians as they wish. So it's this anodyne way of smuggling in really ideologically loaded and violent implications that sound kind of generic and benign, if not liberal, and they're only evoked for one side. Why is there no Palestinian right to self-defense? Why is there no Palestinian right to exist? That's not meant for interrogation, because you're just supposed to brainlessly echo these mantras.
Right. And if you were to abstract this out to any other country, obviously you would see how absurd that question is. If you were to ask the very people who have advocated for the bombing of Iran, if you were to ask them if the Islamic Republic of Iran has a right to exist, I'm sure they would say something like, well, I think the Iranian people have the right to self-determination and they should choose the government that they want, right? And so these exact same people who are insistent on Israel's right to exist, would certainly understand the absurdity of that question when posed about a different country. Does the United States have the right to exist? No, it does exist, but does it have a right to exist in exactly the way that it is right now, with all the staggering inequality, with the, you know, legacy of racism and genocide? Like, well, I mean, no country has a right to exist to that, but countries do exist, right? And so, like, you can see how all of this is just meant to humiliate and to have this kind of Zionist ideology be fundamental and unquestioned. And then built upon that, you get to then kind of poke holes in these, you know, candidates' viability because, oh, they're not granting, you know, a certain kind of people in a certain kind of place the right to exist. It sounds discriminatory when actually what's discriminatory is the insistence on people pledging fealty to this concept, which exists nowhere in international law and exists nowhere else in the world. No place is ever subject to that kind of questioning except over Israel.
So let's examine this question answered poorly, because CNN asked Ro Khanna about this. He has endorsed El Sayed, and Ro Khanna, the House member from California, is a little bit of a... we'll say he flip-flops a lot, or he's very wishy-washy. He doesn't seem to have firm ideological commitments. And he gives a very poor answer. He gives an answer that affirms the ethno-supremacist status. And this is, he's fairly consistent on this. This is why he took 6 weeks to call for a ceasefire in Gaza and was spewing right to defend itself cliches as the body count. He recently did an event, Khanna did, in front of the Wall of Tears in Dearborn, Michigan, which is an art exhibit that's in the park in the middle of Dearborn. I did an event in Dearborn the day it was put up, by coincidence. I was across the street at the Arab American Museum doing a book event for How to Sell a Genocide. And it's over 18,000, the names of the 18,000 children published in The Guardian and The Washington Post. Again, the number's almost certainly twice that. It's a very, very moving art piece. If you have a chance, if you're in Michigan, please, please go see it. And he was in front of it and he was saying, this is the litmus test for Democrats. He's clearly running in 2028. They need to pass this test. And I asked him on social media, and again, I'm not doing this to be gotcha. I genuinely think this is the issue with the liberal Zionist half-ass carve-out. I said, while he was giving this, you know, sermon about how important Gaza was for the Democratic Party, and he now supports an arms embargo, but he's in front of this mural, this, I guess, this art exhibit, this wall of tears in Dearborn, saying this is the litmus test. And I said, well, 6,000 of those 18,000 children died before you called for a ceasefire. Do you have any regrets for doing that? Do you think maybe you took too long, or you accepted this idea that Israel has a right to defend itself in these kind of meaningless cliches while hand-wringing about letting in more aid or other some such while running pass block for the White House and its support for Israel? He didn't get back to me. I don't think he'll ever get back to me. He has talked to me before, but he did not talk to me about that. And I think that that's the issue. The issue is that if you affirm these axioms of liberal Zionism that seem kind of maybe benign or even an improvement over Netanyahuism or whatever, you set the stage for this kind of carnage, because then you're just debating some arbitrary amount of Palestinians who deserve to die by scandalizing and otherizing Palestinians, not just sitting back and being mowed down and occupied by Israel. And so his answer here, I think, exposes the problem of this half-baked measure, this kind of trying to split the baby measure. So let's listen to his response to where they play their interview with Al-Sayed to him. It's all very meta. Specifically, Donna Bash plays the CNN interview where they grill Al-Sayed three times over Israel's right to exist. They play it to Rokana and have him respond. Because if you don't give the right answer, they're not only going to grill you three times, they're going to grill all your buddies and ask them to condemn you, right? So let's listen to Representative Khanna's response to this meta critique by CNN, where they play their own clip.
The undercurrents of the progressive left has been anti-Israel sentiment. And I want to ask you about one of the candidates that you endorsed, you rallied with, Michigan Senate candidate Abdul Al-Sayed. He was on this program with Casey yesterday. I want to play a little bit of that. Do you believe Israel has a right to exist?
So, Casey, AIPAC's become a big issue in this election because AIPAC's already spent $30 million in this election. They're by far the biggest spender in the race. Now, the question about a right to exist, it's interesting because nobody's ever asked me whether or not I believe Palestine has a right to exist. Every single president who served has said that they believe in a two-state solution. Israel exists.
You say it exists, but does it have a right to?
No, I didn't say that. I just said the question of Israel's existence is not a question.
What do you think? Does Israel have a right to exist as a Jewish state?
Yes, Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish democratic state, as a secure state, with equal rights. Now, I've also been very critical of what's happened in the occupied territories, in the West Bank and Gaza. I also believe in Palestinian self-determination and a Palestinian state. And I've said what happened in Gaza was a genocide, like the UN, and there are people who disagree with me. But I have visited Israel three times. Of course, I believe that Israel has the right to exist.
All right, so here he says a state commits genocide, but then has a right to exist, but then has a right to exist as a Jewish state, but then has a right to exist as a Jewish state with equal rights.
No, Adam. Democratic state.
Sorry, democratic state. I love when they throw that in there. So how you can have an ethno-supremacist state where that gives ethno-supremacist preferences to a certain group, but not others, and be democratic and have equal rights is a little confusing to me. I think Khanna is simply doing affirming Israel's right to exist to kind of bracket it off into something he doesn't want to deal with because he has, again, I don't think he has any real firm commitments here. Of course, it doesn't make any sense. This is all just complete contradictions. And again, I think Al-Sayed gave a pretty good answer. He gave an answer that was not affirming Zionist axioms, but was also not going to get bogged down in litigating things that are too complex for the, again, 15 boomers at the airport in Fort Lauderdale watching this. So, again, what is the point of that? If a regime, we'll call it a regime, we'll use one of the spooky words that our media loves to use, commits genocide, what does it mean to say it has a right to exist? Is that just like an oopsie? Is that something that they go to timeout for? I don't know what that even means. Clearly, the genocide is downstream from a broader ideological arrangement that is not sustainable. That, again, requires getting rid of a specific people who exist and have existed in a specific place that's inconvenient to their national mythology. So, again, these contradictions are just papered over. because he doesn't want to, he wants to sort of take this Brad Lander middle ground lane of like, well, yeah, it's a genocide, but they have a right to exist. And it's like, well, okay, but what's the plan to make sure they don't just keep committing genocide forever? Unclear.
Well, right, because it's actually fundamentally doing something different. It's exactly why no one would say that an apartheid state in South Africa had a right to exist, but you could argue that a political entity called South Africa did exist. But that is never allowed for Israel or Israel-Palestine to think of it as one entity, one geographical, potentially political entity. But to say that, no, this state, current modern state that was created in 1948 has a right to exist. Again, nothing in international law affirms any other country or nation or state or territory's right to exist. That does not exist. That's not a thing. Not a thing. The idea that this kind of ritual is done again and again and again, and not just again and again and again, Adam, but as you found in the past decade, this is done hundreds and hundreds more times in the media. But the weight of that, percentage-wise, Adam, is over 22,000% more.
Yeah, and it's effectively infinite more, because the five examples are, as we talked about, not brought up by the publications or the anchors or the reporters from these media institutions. They're brought up by the occasional guest quote, right?
Right.
So it's actually infinitely more. It's really like maybe 800 to zero when you actually break down the data from the actual voices of the institutions themselves. It is simply not something ever brought up by our media. It is not something mention, much less interrogation, relitigation, asking a question three times, bringing that person's friend on, or is their, you know, or their ally, and then and then playing the clip for them, and then asking them to defend. I mean, again, this would never ever happen for anything involving Palestine or Palestinians. Forget right to exist. Forget right to defend itself. Just like, do you support starving them, or do you support killing tens of thousands of them? Would never be given this level of scandalization. It exists simply for Zionism and for Israel.
Yeah, so pay attention to that. You will hear it again and again and again. It is, as we've said, ubiquitous in any discussion of Israel, and especially those who maybe oppose, I don't know, genocide. It is then this kind of disciplining question that the media weaponizes again and again endlessly, and has for decades. But when you do hear this from now on, questions about Israel's right to exist, again, implied as a Jewish state, not as a state where everyone has equal rights, this is disciplining. And this is to turn opposition to genocide, opposition to ethnic cleansing, into support for it in the minds of the viewers who are not given the full story and maybe are not thinking as critically about this as maybe they could. So that will do it for this Citations Needed news brief. Thank you all for listening and continuing to support the show. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter and Blue Sky at Citations Pod, Facebook, Citations Needed, and become a supporter of the show through patreon.com/citationsneededpodcast. All your support through Patreon is so incredibly appreciated, as we are 100% listener funded. We will be back very soon with more full-length episodes of Citations Needed, currently in its 9th season, so stay tuned for that. But until then, thanks again and again and again for listening. I'm Nima Shirazi.
I'm Adam Johnson.
Citations Needed senior producer is Florence Borough Adams. Our producer is Julianne Tweeten. Production assistant is Trenda Lightburn. The newsletter is by Marco Cardellano. The music is by Granddaddy. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you next time.